Welcome back to Words from the Woods, a Trails Rock podcast. Dr. Jen Spitzer joins us today as we try to bring awareness for National Eating Disorders Week, which was back in February and we missed it. This is a very important topic and really personal topic for some of us, and maybe to you as well. As a heads up, this episode has stories and information regarding eating disorders. If this is triggering to you, please keep that in mind. Otherwise, give us a listen, gain some awareness, and if you need someone to talk to, we're all ears. With that, let's get to it.
Now you can.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. We are really excited today to have a special guest, and our special guest is Jen Spitzer, Dr. Jen Spitzer. She is, well, why don't I let you actually introduce yourself?
Sure. So what do you want to know? Just profession or sure. Background?
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm a chiropractor. I work with a lot of runners, but I also work with just regular people. I work with the Rochester Nighthawks as well, so a little bit of everything.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so they're in season right now, so we're very busy.
Her most famous patient is me, though.
That's what I was just going to say. I mean,
cracked my back a few times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I do during the day. But I also coach. So I coach high school cross country, and I used to coach track. But in the past year, I have just become a volunteer coach because it was just getting a little crazy with being a parent and doing everything else.
It's a lot. I don't think people realize what goes into coaching, especially at the high school level.
Like,
it's your evenings, it's your weekends, it's not money really.
Yeah, people don't do it for the money. You do it because you like it. So, but I've been coaching pretty much since I graduated high school. I started out coaching at like a running camp as like a college, you know, mentor coach, and then officially started coaching in 2018, I think it was. And I've been at Pittsford Sutherland, so been doing that, which has been awesome. I really like that. I'm glad I was able to make that work with my other job. So, but that's what I do.
Yeah.
And you are also a runner.
I'm also a runner. Yeah.
A very talented runner.
So I've been running a long time. I think I started running when I was probably like 12 years old. Not a ton, but just as a way to like kind of like condition for other sports that I thought were going to be my thing. And then, found out that I really enjoyed running and ran in high school, had a really successful high school career, went on to run Division I track and cross country in college at Rutgers University. After college,
Seton Hall's better.
They were one of our big competitors. Big East. No, Big East is no longer anymore.
The Big East still is.
It's
but
like
it's,
way different. Yeah, the big. It's not what it used to be.
The
it's
big
like,
programs are gone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird now.
It's a basketball conference now.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyways, we were in the Big East then, and we switched to the Big Ten at the very end. Yeah. But after college, I stepped away from running for a little bit. I did a couple other sports. I think I was just kind of burnt out from my college experience, and it was just like I was injured a lot. So I stepped away for a little bit, did some more like strength training type stuff, and eventually was kind of like, I miss this. I feel like I'm ready to kind of come back to it. And I did that in the way of like doing triathlons at first. So I did triathlons for a couple of years, did an Ironman, and then...
Didn't do an Ironman with, like, a broken wrist or something. I remember seeing the pictures.
Yeah, so that was, not planned, but I did Ironman Lake Placid in 2017, and a week before the race, I crashed my bike in the dumbest way. I was in Canandaigua going down Main Street, and something fell off my bike, and I, you know, was like, oh, I dropped something, I better stop and turn around, and... People that cycle know you have to lean, you know, you got your one way you lean, you clip out first. I accidentally leaned the other way. My foot was not clipped out and could not stop. So I very ungracefully fell on the ground and was like, okay, like, you know, more embarrassed than anything.
There's
like,
so many videos on YouTube of that. I don't think anyone that rides with clips has ever not done that.
It's like rite of passage, falling off your bike.
Sitting in
but
an intersection.
But maybe not like a week before your goal race.
And I had fallen before that, but that was just like a dumb mistake. Right. So I fell and immediately was embarrassed because it was on Main Street. So there's tons of cars going by.
Jeez.
Got up quickly and was like, I need to get home. So at that point I lived, I think we were about, it was probably like 20 miles to home. So I biked home and was like, my wrist is sore. Like, this isn't great. Got home, it was all swollen, and was like, oh no. Went to, I think, probably urgent care the next day and got an x-ray, and they were like, yeah, it's broken. But I ended up somehow convincing the orthopedist to let me do the race, and we got a waterproof cast, and
I was gonna ask what kind of cast did you, okay.
Yeah, we got a waterproof cast, yeah. And I ended up shout out to Towpath Bike because they switched up my gearing from left to right, so I could use my.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Cool.
Yeah, so I could use my. So I guess it was my right hand that was casted, so I could use my left hand for most of the stuff.
Wouldn't that be really hard to switch?
It was tricky at first, but yeah. I quickly figured it out, and then I would just reach across to switch rings. But so that was my Ironman experience in a cast. But I finished it, so that was
that's
at that point
impressive.
The goals changed to just kind of finishing the race, and it was what it was. I wasn't gonna not do it.
Right.
So after all that, but
yeah,
did that.
And then you got into some trail running recently.
Yeah. I was really happy to finally get into that. So after tries, I did a lot of road running and stuff, and my background is cross country, which I love cross country. But as an adult, I don't love I guess I don't love cross country races as much.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just different as an adult, but I really like trail running.
Yeah. Even if you're on a team as an adult, the feeling is totally different
than
that team that you had in high school and college.
Yeah.
Like the bus rides and the dining hall experience and the goofing around at practice.
Right.
It's different as an adult.
It is, yeah. So I've done two or three just of Peak Lab and Series cross country. And it was just different. It wasn't my favorite. So, but I enjoyed doing Money on the Jenny Light last year a lot. And I think I'm going to do Cayuga 50K in June. That's on my list.
We'll be down there leading the start and finish line.
Awesome. Okay.
So we do that every year. Only year that we didn't go was the COVID year.
Okay.
And last year.
Oh, yeah. We didn't take 1 week old babies.
They were,
you were pregnant. No, you were pregnant.
I was just
almost
say.
About to be born.
Yes.
Okay.
I wanted to go.
Eric
That's what it was.
Yes. And Eric was I think we can go. And I was I'm due.
Very soon.
Yeah, but I was you don't have to do anything.
And
just hang out.
He was you can just hang out. And I was oh, yes, because what I would like to do is hang out at a race.
It made
when
sense.
It's hot,
labor.
Humid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and buggy, and then possibly go into labor, but we're not home.
Made total sense to me.
And I was we can't do this.
Aw.
It was actually really sad both years that we missed that race. It's a great race.
That's what I've heard.
Just
I've heard
a really
good
cool vibe.
We have fun there.
Yeah.
So if you're there, you'll see us a bunch.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I probably just haven't signed up yet, but it's on my list to do.
Yeah, for sure.
In the old bookmarks.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, that's a fun, brief introduction into your sort of delving into your running. I mean, we'll have an opportunity to get into some stuff as we go on today. But the topic of today's show, we missed National Eating Disorder Awareness Week.
Mm-hmm.
We've just been incredibly busy, but it's on our schedule last year. It's on our schedule this year. And we think within the community of distance running, it's a really important topic for us to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, we would have thought about bringing on a professional in the counseling field or maybe a dietitian or the registered dietitian to talk about it. But we thought it would make sense to what qualifies us to talk about it, right?
Right.
And I think that personal experiences give the ability to talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to break down some statistics and talk about those a little bit that any person that works in the field would be able to talk about. And we're also going to talk a little bit about our own experiences with eating disorders and bring awareness to it. So I think it has an opportunity to be a factual podcast this week, but also entertaining in the sense that you can really learn about people and what we go through. So I guess, when you talk about what qualifies us to even talk about this, I know for me, having been living through it the last few years. And as women in the sport, I know that that's something you guys can probably touch on.
Right. Yeah. I definitely dealt with that in college. It was a big thing, especially in, and I know men's too, but women's competitive distance running in college, a lot of the culture on the teams is, eating is a big thing. And, sometimes coaches are a little bit involved in that too, which is not great, but, that definitely plays a role. Some, comments from people and, the desire to have a lower race weight to be faster.
And we have a bunch of links that we're going to put into the show notes and we'll talk about some of those topics as we go. And I think maybe we even have some of our own personal experiences, and where do these things start and right. how do they gain so much speed? Mm-hmm. And when you look at female athletes, it's like 54% of female athletes at Division I schools are unhappy with their weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about the most fit women in the world, like right, Division right. I athletes in the United States, nobody's more fit.
Mm-hmm.
And 54% are unhappy with their weight. Like, where does it come from?
Right.
You know?
And I think a big part of the problem is if you're not in the sport, I think people in general look at runners and say like, oh, well, they look like that because they run a lot. And then you become a runner and you start running and you're like, well, I don't look like that.
Right.
I'm running so much. Like, why am I not like a stick?
Right.
And then you think like, oh, well, maybe I'm eating too much, or
yeah.
maybe I can do something to make this, you know, different.
Mm.
So people start to kind of manipulate their eating yeah. patterns or exercise.
And I think going along with that, like mm-hmm. you were saying, you know, little comments that people will make
right.
that also start to get into your head.
Right.
So I know like my sister ran in college,
mm-hmm.
D3, but her
not even.
No, I don't know.
Sorry. It was the NACA, whatever. It's
okay,
like no. the Roberts. I joke around with her all about it all the time.
I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, no.
In any event.
So she
ran
college.
Yeah, she ran.
She was an athlete.
And her
is
coach.
An athlete.
And like, so that's even,
mm-hmm.
you know, like competitive wise, it's not, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's not the end all be all.
Right.
But I know she had stories about things that their coach would say.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like, why am I not getting faster? And the coach would be like, well, we could talk about your weight, and she was
yeah.
like, well, no, we actually can't mm-hmm. talk about that, you know? So it's like,
right.
you know, little that, I guess that's like an example of a bigger thing, but
mm-hmm.
I think even little comments, like you're saying of, you know, you don't look like a runner.
Right. And that,
those things get into your head. It
right.
really can mess with you.
And I definitely felt like for me, at least in high school, I always had like sort of a feeling like I don't really look like a runner because I'm really tall and I have
mm-hmm.
like a larger frame. And even though I'm, you know, thinner, I was like, oh, I don't look like, you know, the girls I'm racing. I'm like a foot taller than them and like
right.
a lot bigger. And I remember very distinctly, like I went away to college and I came back my sophomore year and had lost weight. And a friend of mine, her mom, and it was not like she didn't mean anything by it, but
mm-hmm.
she's like, you look real like a real runner now.
Mm. Oh,
she said that to me. And I like that was like
yeah.
positive reinforcement.
I
like,
was just
oh,
gonna say,
like
right.
I'm doing something right. Like I look like a runner now.
Yeah.
Like I didn't before,
yeah.
but now I'm skinnier. So like,
I always feel like I can never believe that these things just don't go away. So like I had that experience in 1999
yeah.
in college, and your sister had that in 2020.
Right.
Like,
mm-hmm.
like I got injured and missed like 4 or 5 months, couldn't
yep.
run at all.
Yeah.
And the first day back, I was like, okay, like, you know, I met with coach in his office and we're like, what's the plan? And he goes,
yep.
lose weight and come back and talk to me.
Yeah.
Like that was the gist of it. There was no like talk with this person, get
right.
with this person. It was just lose weight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
how? I'm eating
right.
in the dining hall.
Right.
You know,
I know,
and I haven't been running.
It's terrible because, yeah, you don't, you're, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. You have no experience
right.
yeah.
in, like, how do I eat appropriately or,
right.
you know, what's enough for me? Because I had the same thing. I wasn't injured, but I went into college. And right now, if people don't know, you know, what I look like, I'm right now I'm 150 pounds and I'm like 5'10". That's what I looked like when I left high school.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When I got to college, at a certain point, the end of my freshman year, my coach said to me, you should probably lose 10 to 15 pounds before
oh my
you come
gosh.
Back. You know, just kind of casually the last thing you said. Then we parted ways, went away for the summer. And I'm like perfectionist,
yeah.
people pleaser, type A person. Was like, okay, this is on my list of things for the summer. Like,
this
I got
to
do my
mileage.
I got to
right.
do this. I got to do that. I got to lose 15 pounds. So I did. And I came back, you know, much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, did it, you know, I probably shouldn't have been that small. I ended up getting injured.
Right.
But you think, like, this person's, you know, knows
they're
better
the
than
expert.
I do.
Yeah.
They're the expert. Like,
yeah.
I probably should do what they say if I want to do better, if
right.
I want to improve.
Right.
So you just kind of are like, okay. Like,
and that gets to, I mean, this is like a completely separate topic, but just the whole idea of coaches and the influence that they have over their athletes and
right.
the way that they can manipulate that and really use that for bad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think when you look at this stuff, so if you just did a quick Google search and you said, you know, eating disorders, college athletes, the results are almost endless.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories are You know, like, here's a University of Oregon female runners say they were body shamed and pushed to lose weight, right?
Yeah.
So former members of the track team saying that they were basically forced into eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have the Mary Kane story, like, I changed my body for my sport and no girl should have to do that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, article after article of, like, what is happening at the college level. And then you look at things like, you know, when you start to look at the statistics and you say, like, you know, 10% of the United States population ends up with an eating disorder at some point in your life. And then you take these people that are really a microcosm of this tiny subset.
Right.
And it's like so many of them are essentially being, and it's not just running. It's any sport where the coach can try to justify a power to weight ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So your cycling team, your volleyball teams, your your swim program.
Even in like sports where like your physical appearance is a big part, like gymnastics.
Right.
Yes.
I was just about to say.
So that was one of the links that we're going to share here is that, you know, when they surveyed running and gymnastics just for female athletes in NCAA, 69% of those athletes in running and gymnastics were carrying a weight that caused them to miss their periods.
Right. And actually, it's bad because
70%.
I think people don't totally understand, especially younger people, because I didn't have my period all through college because I was too small and I just got put on birth control and that was like the answer.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone a couple days ago and she was telling me her daughter, you know, ran in high school and college and somehow we got on the topic of eating disorders and she was like, oh, well, my daughter never had her period. She was just really fit. It wasn't that she, you know, she ate a lot. Like, but there's still some kind of energy imbalance there. If you're not getting your period, like, you might not have like what people see as an eating disorder, but something's going on where you're probably not getting enough food for the amount of activity you're doing.
Right.
Because that's like not a normal thing to just not like.
Right. Or even if it's not related to an eating disorder, like not getting your period regularly.
Right. There's something
wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Something needs to be addressed.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I think that's part of it. Addressing it is so like you talk about like how does it gain this momentum that and it's like hidden, but then, you know,
shameful,
so I did some research on
like
the funding of different diseases. And this is, it's considered a disorder. Eating disorders it's not a disease, but when you look at, you know, so comparing the funding of, you know, for every 1,000 people that suffer from something, 73 cents is spent on funding to research eating disorders. And then you have $86 for schizophrenia and $88 for Alzheimer. And so, like, but there's significantly more people with eating disorders. And it's not even a dollar per thousand. It's just 73 cents. We don't look at it. We don't seem to care about it. It's the second highest mortality rate for mental illness. And we just sit here with it. And then everywhere you look are examples of things that maybe we shouldn't be doing. Even like, so there was a Pearl Izumi ad, I'll never forget. This has to be 20 years ago.
I was just going to say.
And you were so mad. We were reading Runner's World and you came across this ad. And so I started looking at like what's out there currently. And Rafa, which is a huge cycling brand, they have had a water bottle and the text on the water bottle that they were selling in cycling stores said, to achieve race weight, Marco Pettini, according to the legend, would ride for 6 hours on nothing more than water, returning home and having just a slice of watermelon. And they were selling that like
that's a
hey,
good thing.
Here's how you
how
can
did,
lose
how
the weight.
Yeah.
6 hours on your bike and a slice of watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so that's one of the top stories in the world.
Right.
Well, what's really happening is what he's really doing was using EPO and testosterone and drugs because you can't perform like that if you don't eat.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but we don't talk about those things. We sort of hide them. It's like 1 in 5 people will seek treatment. That's it.
Yeah.
Like,
right. I mean, people don't want to admit that they have an issue or they don't think they have an issue because they're like, well, I'm not throwing up or I'm eating, but I'm just eating healthy.
There's lots of ways to justify it.
Yeah,
and
that's what I was just going to say.
And then as a society, we sort of
glorify.
Yeah. Or, you know, you lose weight
and
it might be significantly in the wrong direction and somebody might say you look great
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, again, part of the problem is people right. comment like, oh, you look so good, or you look so fast, and then it feeds into it like, oh, like, I'm doing the right thing, I should keep doing this, I should keep eating this way, or, you know, not eating this way.
Yeah, but I think when I was thinking about this conversation that we are having now and thinking about the direction that it's going to go in, I think one thing that really has started to change but also hasn't changed enough, I don't think, is just the way that we talk to each other and the way that people are so comfortable, and I'm guilty of it just as much as anybody else. I try really hard not to, and I try to really be cognizant of the things I'm saying and who I'm saying them to, but I think we have been conditioned to just accept that people are going to make comments about how we look and that we are going to comment, and we try to be like nice to somebody by saying, oh my gosh, you look great, you've lost
so much weight.
Yeah. And I mean, that's internalized fat phobia, I guess, right? Like to, but
it even goes the other way. So like, I'll eventually, after we have our break, talk a little bit about some of the stuff that I've dealt with. But I started a race for Jonathan once because he was going to be at the finish line.
Okay.
So I was starting the race. And so I stood up on the picnic table. I pretended, I was like, oh, I'm Jonathan from Rochester Running Company. I like joked, everybody knows I'm not Jonathan, that I'm Eric from Trails Rock. And I started the race. And then some guy almost towards the back, as he's running to head off into the woods, looks at me and says, if you want to be pretend to be Jonathan, maybe lose some weight. And I was like, I am never speechless. But I was like, what the?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know what to say to that. I was like, that, it was so
And for him
rude,
to be speechless.
Like, to, and to not have any clue what someone is going through, to say things.
And it was somebody that you
didn't
know.
I didn't know who it was.
Like, it's not like it was a friend. It's like, I don't know if that makes it better or worse, that it was a stranger, but
But that just goes to speak to the comfort that people have to speak on other people's appearance. And I think that conversation drives people deeper into these issues that they deal with.
Yeah. Totally.
So.
And I think, I mean, it can start so young also, like the comments. And so I've tried to be, even like with the boys, you know, I've tried to be so careful with the way that I talk about them. You know, Quinn has always been bigger than Finn. From what I've read, Twin A usually is bigger, but like when they were first born, a couple of times I was like, oh, you're my little chunky monkey, and then I was like, oh my god, what are you doing? Because my mom used to do that to my sister and I, and it still is in my head, like
internally.
And I'm like, what is wrong with me? So again, like I mean, I feel like I'm aware of it, and I still catch myself doing things all the time.
And
so I just
You were on a podcast with somebody else once who commented about your weight. And it was like, what is where is the appropriate level of this?
Yeah, I don't even remember the context.
It was the looking like a runner.
That's right, because that's always been a hang up for me, because I'm like, I don't look like a runner. Like, I'm short and stocky, you know, and that's just always been my body type. I have never had an eating – well, I would never classify myself as having an eating disorder, although I did have a summer where I definitely was like, I'm going to lose weight, and I did not eat well, and I did lose weight. But even then, like, I just am a more muscular – shorter build, like that's just my body type. But I've had a few people say things like that, like somebody once, it was when skinny jeans, like colored skinny jeans came out, and we had just started like really getting into running, but I had said something about wanting to wear them, but I didn't think I could, and this person was like, oh, if you lost some weight, you probably, your legs would look better in them. And I was like, what? Damn. Okay.
Yeah. From someone that is in our running community that knows us
like
quite
friend.
Well.
Like, yeah. But so I think, like, again, people are just so comfortable commenting about other people's appearances and bodies. And I don't know. I just hope that people start to really think about that. And
How it affects other people. Exactly. Yeah. Because you don't know what, you know, how someone feels about themselves.
Right.
Some, you know, someone might be super confident and just think it's funny, like, oh, you know, we're joking around. But, you know, other people might take that really, you know, harshly, and then go home and not eat dinner and, like, go run for an hour because they're like, oh, my gosh, they just called me fat.
Right.
I don't want to be, I don't want to be fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. Like, I guess the other thing is it doesn't matter what you look like or, like, how big you actually are. Because it happens to everybody. Like,
I
feel like there's probably not one person that's listening to this that hasn't had that experience where somebody says something where you're like, oh, is that true? Like, is my body really to this or not enough that?
Right.
So I think it's like a universal experience that really
needs
that needs to stop.
Yeah, because even people that might be like, you know, inherently like very skinny, people say them too, like, oh, you're too skinny, or, you know, this
eat
or that.
Eat a cheeseburger.
Right, exactly. Even if that's just the way they are and they don't have an eating disorder. People constantly being like, oh, you look like you need to eat some fries.
Right.
Like, that is harmful too.
Right.
Like, just the opposite.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, again, just, like, thinking about how we speak to each other and how you talk to yourself, like, in your head too.
Right.
Because that's a whole nother...
Yeah, I struggle with that, really... How do you talk to yourself? Like, there are people, like, I don't agree with certain approaches, like this David Goggins approach, where he'll say, like, if you think you're overweight, stand in front of a mirror and call yourself fat until you want to change. And I'm thinking, my goodness, you could literally end up dying with that mentality.
Right. Yeah.
Like, because you might never think you're not fat.
Well, I was just going to say, also, you might not, like, body dysmorphia is also
a
real
thing.
Yeah,
like, you could have an actual thing going on that won't let you see what everyone else is seeing. And his message is, just tell yourself you're fucking fat and that you just need to work hard.
Wild.
And it's like, and that's the language you're using. He's aggressive. And it's like, and maybe it, like,
well,
hits
some
home
people,
with some
that.
Of this, like, bro code thing. Like, you know, but it doesn't. There's no science behind that attitude, and there's like, there's no proof that doing that will work, and it will perpetuate this negative self-talk. There's a ton of science on positive self-talk, improving your results as an athlete.
Sure.
Right.
And visualizing success.
I was just gonna say visualizing.
And not hate speaking on yourself, right? So, like, but when people like that get a platform, and they get a huge platform, it really does a lot of damage to people that are in this field working hard to say there's better ways for us to handle this.
Right.
You know, so
I heard a thing once that was like, if you wouldn't say it to your friend,
don't say it to yourself.
Yeah. And I was like, that's a really good way to think of things. Like, sometimes if I get in my own head about things, that's like,
right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say this to someone else. So why am I saying this to myself?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
hard,
been one of my struggles as like a former collegiate runner, and one of the things I've worked really hard on was to like get my mindset away from what I was as a college runner, because I'm never going to run like that again. Like, it doesn't line up as you push towards and into your 40s that you're going to run like you did when the only thing you had to do was go to class, eat food, and run.
Right.
Like, that was it. The reason
Good
I was
job.
In that school was to run, you know, and for years, though, I had this mentality with my running that, like, if I just do this thing here, if I just work harder here, I'll do that again, and then I'll start winning races. And, like, I was putting the value on the wrong thing, and I was never – I was running okay. I never ran great because I was not doing it for the right reasons with the right mentality. And that negative self-talk comes in real quick when your mindset is like how you used to be, and then you miss a split, if you aren't positive about missing that split, if you get negative on it, you miss the next one, and then you might as well walk.
Right.
And like, that's what happens in your head, right? Like, what am I even doing out here?
Right. I'm not going to run the time I want to run.
Right.
Like, might as well stop.
Rather than running, you know, and now after I've gone through all of these surgeries and, you know, was it 8 surgeries in 7 years, and now it's like, my goodness, I would really just like to go run with my friends,
know? Yeah,
and
different goals.
So, like, I had it removed for me, but I wish, and we've talked about this a lot, I wish I would have found a way to remove that mindset, my own self, 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, when I was still thinking, oh, I could do it. You know, it's like the reality is probably not.
Yeah. I think becoming a parent has changed my mindset. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you feel like that, but prior to being a mom, like, I was still stuck in that, like you were saying, that I'm gonna be like my college self, and like, I was still very focused on like all the things I was focused on when I was in college, like in terms of like weight and like how I looked in my running uniform and like all those things. And I think that like my priorities kind of changed after, so I'm really thankful for that, and I don't really think that way anymore, but it stuck with me for a long time, like from, you know, probably middle high school all the way through like my late 20s. I definitely had like really poor like self-image, you know, just like, oh, like I have to wear these like really short shorts and I'm going to do a race. Like, let me see what I look like in the mirror before I go out to the starting line. Like, yeah. I don't like how I look. Like, now people are going to look at me. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily do that anymore, although it's still like kind of there. It probably will always be there. But mm-hmm. yeah, that I think things just changed because priorities are different.
Yeah. And I've felt that way a little bit. It's mm-hmm. it's more now I want to be able to do things so that I can do things with them.
Sure, yeah.
And to show them that, like, we can do hard things.
Right, you can, yeah. When you're a parent, you can still, like, set goals and, like,
right.
It's not just, like, I don't want, because I see some parents that their whole life is about their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't want to be like that right. because it's not supposed to be, like, right. you're their parent. But, right. like, you're still a person.
You're still a human. Yeah.
You're still a human. Like, you still should.
Like, what makes you you?
Right. You still should have yeah. hobbies and interests and friends. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can do things together. But I think it's important to show them that, like, your life doesn't end when you become a parent, a mom or a dad or something. And
right.
you can still do things and achieve goals.
So I want us to take a quick break here because I want to talk a little bit about, as parents, how the history and the future of eating disorders plays into how we, Sheila mm-hmm. touched on it a little bit, but how do we communicate mm-hmm. with our children? How do we make them aware? So I want to touch on that a little bit when we get back from the break. And then I'm going to take an opportunity to share some of my own experiences. We already talked a little bit about some of the comments and stuff that we've dealt with, but I have a few more that I want to put out there because to me, when we look at National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, it's going to be, for me, a little bit about awareness and mm-hmm. what that looks like for other people, for myself, and how we can get things a little bit more public than they are so that if there's people that need to find help, they can find help.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back, and we'll pick it right back up. And we're back.
All right, we are back, and we are continuing our conversation about eating disorders and, I guess, body image. And so we want to come back with some conversation about the internet and the ways that the internet can kind of play into body image.
It's always been the devil for body image.
Disorders. Mm. Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, we were kind of just talking about this during the break, but when we were teenagers, like, the internet really wasn't.
There wasn't Instagram. Or,
yeah, like, it just wasn't the way that it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, magazines being the big thing.
Right.
And those were, I mean, that could be really rough.
Sure.
But the internet definitely has just really added a whole new dimension. And so mm-hmm. today, I got a text message while I was at work.
That's right.
From Eric. And he was like,
not safe for work.
What if I looked like this? Yeah. And it was a picture.
And a really realistic picture.
It was yeah. a pretty realistic picture of him with, like, muscles. Like a bodybuilder.
Yeah. Shredded.
Yeah.
At competition level.
And I was like, what in the world is this picture?
Yeah, and
Eric, what was the picture?
I just was scrolling on Instagram and I got an ad for an AI app that would change. You could upload any picture you want mm-hmm. and then type in a prompt and it would create that prompt. So you could ask it to do anything. You could change your hair color, you could make your waist smaller, you could you know, turn into an elf. Like and the app has all these suggestions of things. So, like, St. Patrick's Day just mm-hmm. came up. So there was, like, a whole list of, like, pick this theme.
Yeah.
But, like, it would be, like,
yeah.
for the women, it would be, like, the sexy St. Patrick's Day
outfit,
right?
Of course, yeah.
But, like, so you could just upload yourself yeah. a picture of you standing in your kitchen, and then it converts it to that.
Right.
And it's like, so really, it's just taking your facial features, mm-hmm. and then it's morphing you onto
right.
what you might want to look like.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's funny to an extent.
Right.
Right.
I mean, like, all the filters and stuff that you can use, like, sometimes that stuff is really fun to play around with.
Yeah.
And then also it can be really damaging if you, especially I think if you already are kind of like having a struggle with your body image.
Yeah. So this right. is like filters on steroids, right? Because you can literally say this, like, exactly what you want. Like, you could type in, like, broad chest, big shoulders, big biceps, small weight, like, you, and, mm-hmm. and it'll do exact blue shorts, like, whatever you could type whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it's just like, bing, a couple minutes later, here's
great
your
photo.
Thing. And you can
right.
upload a bunch of different photos and different poses with the same prompt. And
mm-hmm.
it'll take all of those photos and turn them into that.
Right. Yeah. And the scary thing is if people don't know you and they go on your social media and you posted that, like, they might think you actually look like that and be like, wow, like, how does he look like that? Yeah. Why don't I look like that? Like, what's wrong with me?
Right. There is, I'll have to find the account. I share it with you sometimes, Sheila. There's an account on Instagram of a guy who calls out these Instagram fitness influencers.
Oh, okay. Like for Photoshop.
For Photoshopping. Yeah. Yeah. Only if they're selling
products.
A package.
Okay.
Yeah. So if they're like, take my 8-week program, you could look like me. And then he's like, yeah, but you Photoshopped.
Yeah.
And so, and he breaks it down. Like, he literally reverse engineers the photo back to what it should have looked like.
Yeah.
And then he sends him a message ahead of time, says, hey, this is going on. You can feel free to take the pictures down or and admit what you did. You know, if you wanted to try and deny it, go ahead and send me the original raw pictures.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people get really mad at him for it, but he's like, you can't be doing this selling something
product.
Not real.
Right.
Like, I cannot take your 6-week cleanse and look like that because you don't look like that.
Right.
And this is your job.
It's misleading.
Right.
Yeah. So the internet's crazy like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we had said that we wanted to spend this half of the show talking about, like, as parents, what can we do? And I feel like encouraging kids and teaching kids how to be, like, really careful consumers of everything that they're seeing, because I don't think that you can just say your kid's not going to be on the internet and is not going to use these apps.
Be exposed to this stuff.
Yeah, like, that's just, I don't know how realistic that is. At some point, they are going to be on their own, you know, and be able to have access to
it.
Yeah, and so I think it's really important to teach kids early and often about,
yeah,
you know, how do you figure out what's real, what's a legitimate source, and what's not?
Yeah. So I went through the recruiting process in the late 90s. You went through the recruiting process as well.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about, as parents, like, if your child is talented enough and starts being recruited, that you were to interview coaches about something like this? Like, ask them, what is your stance on this? How do you coach about weight and nutrition, and do you weigh the kids, and do you check body fat percentages, and why do you do that?
I think that's super important, because, you know, now it's coming out in the media. A lot of runners are coming out and saying, this was my experience, and that was, you know, my personal experience too in college, but a lot of people are coming out now and saying, hey, when I was in college, we were weighed in front of each other. Coaches made comments.
And they would, like, demote people.
About, you know, our weights. There was, you know, I mean,
so wild.
Even in, you know, my team too, another thing that was, you know, made comments about was what we were eating. Someone was eating a large plate of spaghetti.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, are you really going to eat all that? And, like, why not? I'm a runner. Like, I'm about to go race a 5K tomorrow. Like, why wouldn't I eat it? But it was like a question in your head, like, oh, like,
should I really not eat this?
Yeah. And that led to, like, a lot of people eating salad on the team for the night of a race, which is like not a great pre-race meal.
Yeah.
But, like, not something I eat before a race now, but at the time I did, because it was what was, you know.
Yeah. So, like, you want to give your children autonomy, especially when they are that far
adults,
along.
Adults, basically.
Right.
So finding a way to sort of coach them as they're younger, but also be their advocate still as they get a little bit older. So, like, you know, one of the stories from Oregon was they were doing DEXA scans, which is like that full body scan of, you know, how much is body fat, how much is muscle.
Right.
And these girls would essentially fast for days so that they would have the right percentage in the scan.
Right.
And they were training like that, and they're coming up with injuries because they're so I think it's important as parents to teach your children the right tools and also support and advocate for them. And sometimes it can be hard, especially if they go away to school. Like, I went away, you went away.
Right.
Like,
I think another thing that's important too is, and I think we're more aware of it now, is like the things that we say, like you said before, have an impact, and the things that we do. Like, when I was growing up, diet culture was a big thing, like the Atkins diet and this and that. And that's what I saw adults around me. Like, they were dieting all the time and, like,
and talking about it very openly.
I need to be on a diet. My thighs are too big. This is too big.
Yeah.
And that's just what I knew and was like, this is a thing. Like, maybe I'm too big.
Right.
Not that it was anyone's fault. That was just, like, the culture at the time.
Yes.
But I think now that, like, you know, I have kids, like, we make a point to, like, talk about healthy eating and, like, you know, we exercise and, like, things like, and, like, showing them, like, positive things that we do, not necessarily making it about, like, weight or anything, like, just health, like, you know, we're eating a healthy, balanced meal, you know, we're going to go for a walk because we're going to get exercise today, not because we're trying to stay a certain weight, but because it's for health.
It's good for you.
It's good for you to move.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, just like promoting healthy things that were promoted then, but they were promoted in a poor way, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of like, we're doing this to lose weight, not to be healthy.
Right, right.
Just trying to reframe that. Because those things are still good, like not at the Atkins diet, but like eating healthy foods is a good thing to teach your kids. But
right.
Framing it in a way of what the purpose of it is.
Yeah. I'll never forget in high school, in my health class, there were posters like all over the wall, you know, that's what you do. And there was a poster and it was about a girl and it was like she counts every calorie that she puts into her mouth and then she ruins it all by drinking, binge drinking on the weekend, like something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I was like, what in the world? Like, what a wild poster.
Yeah.
Because the message, like, don't binge drink is a great message, but like, but don't binge drink because you might get fat.
They tie it as a weight. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And like,
it's the same thing you'll hear a lot of people where they say, nothing tastes as good as skinny
feels.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, Nino's Pizza does.
Yeah.
You know, like, try me on that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think, finding ways, just like I said, just to advocate is going to be, I think that's the way forward here, because what's that old saying, like, nothing changes if nothing changes, right? So like, at some point, like, as a coach, we change it, right? Like, as leaders in a community, we change it, right? So we're not worried about what people look like when they run our races. We're not telling a 16-year-old girl that she should eat differently than she wants to eat,
right?
Or if we're having a conversation about food at all, it's about more.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. We did a little clinic for our cross-country team last year, and I did a little talk about like eating for the race, and that was one of my big points, was like, a lot of you probably aren't eating enough, like, so we talked about like, you know, probably want to eat, you know, right after you're done with the race, where most kids like wait till like the end of the day and they don't really eat anything, they're done for the day. But yeah, I think that's a big thing, is, and we noticed it a lot with our, especially the girl, like, you know, the younger high school girls, is it seems to be like people tend to undereat a little bit, maybe not necessarily on purpose, but just like they're busy with school and like you got, you know, don't have a lunch period or something.
Right.
I think like looking at, like you said, you know, some eating more sometimes is better. Megan and David Roche, I talk about them a lot on this podcast. They are, she's got 2 degrees in the medical field. Well, she's got a PhD, but she also has her MD. And they are huge into nutrition. Like, that you need more, especially pertaining to distance running, right? Like, so there is, at this point, they're talking about like carb loading during the event. Like, it should be like 70 grams per hour when you're running these ultras, and they're basically calling it food doping, but also what you're eating all day, every day, and advocating for eating more food, because if you're going to be running these kind of miles, you need food. Otherwise you will get hurt. So I think like that's one of the ways that we can help people overcome these things. If it comes to the eating disorders where you aren't eating enough, it's that the way through this is, you know, with, you know, like strength, not loss, right? Like I'm trying to get stronger. I'm not trying to get smaller. I'm trying to take up more space, not take up less space.
Right.
And I think more women probably need to hear that message. It's okay to take up space.
And
I guess talking about it openly and talking about our struggles also maybe is, and not maybe, I think it is a really good thing. And I think it's, that's true for like any struggle that anybody's having, because when we don't talk about it, then it becomes something that's shameful. And then
people think they're the only ones, like I'm the only one that
will do this. And I think, and well, you know, I want to get into that a little bit real quick.
I was just going to say, and
so I think one of the things we touched briefly on, that, that men have eating disorders too. But it just is not talked about. So the National Eating Disorder Association, their numbers, they believe that 10 million current American men have an eating disorder. And that is an astronomical number, like 10 million. And that the extreme dietary restrictions are increasing in men at a much faster rate than they are in women. So women have sort of always lived with these sort of expectations that we put on women's bodies, but that has started to shift to men now. And it's like, you know, you start with these like Calvin Klein ads and the Abercrombie and Fitch stuff that was in like the, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. And it never used to be, if you look at like all of your sitcoms, it was kind of an overweight dad and a really pretty, small, tiny little wife. And that has started to switch now too, right? Where everybody that's going to be on TV, everybody that's going to be in your movies, they're going to be shredded. They're going to be ripped. They're going to be look big, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that in terms of how men are dealing with food and how they look, I think it's finally something that's really coming forth. So I'm not sure, like, you know, when you talk about different types of eating disorders, one of the things that we've talked mostly about is not eating enough. Mm-hmm. But I have been diagnosed with binge eating disorder, which is significantly different than just overeating. Overeating is like, hey, you're at a party and the chips were out and you had too many and maybe you've got some belly bloat. But binge eating disorder is like you sneak food. You have guilt with your food immediately after doing it. Or like I would give an example of like I might be going to meet friends for dinner with Sheila at night and I would swing by McDonald's on the way home. I don't even particularly like that food. Mm-hmm. And I would get like a cheeseburger and fries and then I would throw it out the window on the parkway so that Sheila didn't know I had it. You know, I would use my own credit card.
You littered?
Yeah, because you have this like shame that comes with like that why are you doing it? Or I would always say like if we got Nino's pizza, if our friends brought us Nino's from Buffalo, and I would joke, it's not going to make it through the night. Like they would bring a sheet pizza. Mm. But it literally wouldn't. I would come down here at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, tiptoe down in here, and I would eat like 5 or 6. I was not hungry. Mm. I had plenty of pizza before we went to bed, and I would finish the food. Sometimes it got so bad, and actually what led me to speak to somebody was I stole her food. She brought home food from Windjammers one night, and that was her lunch for the next day. And I knew that was her lunch for the next day, and I got up in the middle of the night. It was just on my mind when we went to bed that food was in the refrigerator, and I took it, and I sat down here and ate it, and I was like, What am I doing as I'm eating it? And I literally couldn't stop doing it. I knew it was her lunch. I knew that there was no other plan for lunch for the next day. Mm-hmm. And I could not stop eating the food. That wasn't even something that I would have ordered off the menu to begin with. And it's like, so I think that when we share about comments that have been made and things that people say, it's like, yo, like you don't think that guy that made that comment about if you want to pretend to be Jonathan Lewis, like you don't think I know how much weight I've gained? Like you don't think I know what it felt like to be a collegiate runner and, you know, pushing the 4-minute barrier in a mile? Like I know what that feels like and to not be able to do it and then not be able to stop the thing that's stopping me from doing it, that's hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we've dealt with it.
Right. Yeah, and I think like going back to all the comments people will make, I think some of them, at least I hope that some of them, most of them are not made with the intent to hurt. I think a lot of them are like, oh, it's just
sarcastic.
Yeah. Like, or like, I'm just joking with you. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people sometimes realize how hurtful they can be. Mm-hmm.
Or just like, you know, somebody will call me big guy and I'm like, big guy. I'm like, get out of here with that crap. But because I don't picture myself as I look now until I see myself.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, I guess that makes sense, you know? But I think the comments, you internalize those. And then when you're dealing with somebody with an eating disorder, so like you would think, hey, if you don't want someone to call you that, then just go ahead and lose the weight. But when you're dealing with a disorder, it doesn't work that way. So like, you know, if I like, okay, I'm going to try, I tried intermittent fasting. Like it made a lot of sense because I have colitis, so it'll give my stomach chance to heal. Mm-hmm. It's a disaster for me because the second I see food, it's like, and I'll say it out loud to myself. Like I came downstairs today, I was not particularly hungry and I started eating like chips and I was looking at the bag and I literally said out loud, I'm like, you're binging. And like the boys were asleep. It was just me in the house. And because I know I'm going to also have breakfast. Mm-hmm. So like, what am I doing with that bag of chips? Like, it doesn't make any sense when it's happening, but it happens, you know, a few times a week.
You can't stop it.
Yeah. There's like no ability to stop it. And I've been working through work programs and videos and conversations for about a year now. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard. So like when you make a comment like that, sometimes that gets internalized that people have. So like, when you say to a young girl who's lost a ton of weight, you look great.
Right.
She thinks she's doing the right thing.
Right.
But like when you say something to someone who's struggling and you make a comment on the wrong direction, it can spiral up just as quickly as it can spiral down.
Right.
And I think that I would bet that there's a lot of people in our community, men and women, that are dealing with eating disorders, and they don't have anyone to talk to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they don't think they have anyone to talk to.
Right.
And you know, they just are suffering in silence, and they're still coming to these races, and they're looking around like, I've said, you know, I've gone to the doctor and I said, listen, this is embarrassing. I own a trail running company and I can't trail run. It's like, you know, and the doctor's like, well, maybe you could be the representative for the big people. And I'm like, that's a horrible thing for you to say. I never went back to that doctor. I'm like, you suck, you know? but people just don't know how to handle it, I think, because we haven't talked about it. There is no awareness.
Yeah.
So we're going to put a ton of stuff in the show notes this week about awareness, about some of the statistics, but I think that I think the biggest thing I want people to get from this episode is that you should talk. And I'm like, oh, you should talk to people. It hasn't yet worked for me, but I think being able to share it, like, I will. There's ways that I try to minimize it myself. Like, I'll be the first one to talk about my weight publicly because then somebody else can't do it, right? Like, if I make the joke on a group run, somebody else can't make the joke.
Right.
If I say, oh man, it's tough taking all this weight up a hill, somebody else won't have to say it, you know, but I've had comments like that over the last 10 years that just don't seem to stop. So there's awareness of like people that need help, but there's also awareness of people just shut up.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
keep it to yourself.
It's like the nicest way I can say it is like,
right.
Because that guy that made that comment at that race caught me in a rare moment where I did, like, I'm really surprised I didn't go after him. You know, like, to have words, like, I am never without words. And I was like, I came home and I was like, I can't believe what happened to me today.
And I think, you know, this gets to, like, why are we so comfortable commenting on other people's bodies? Because we shouldn't be. Like, I know that was a big thing when I was pregnant, because I was, like, very uncomfortable with the way that my body was changing, very uncomfortable with getting bigger. Like, it was not, and then, like, people want to talk about it. People want to say, like, oh, do you know? And, like, I want to touch your belly. And it's like, I don't want you to touch me. I don't want you to look at me. I want you to comment about me, because I'm not okay with this and I don't know what's happening, you know? But, like, it's just, people are just so okay with, like,
we were at a party that my friends throw. It's an outdoor party. They have a band and there's tons of food. And I had literally, like, just gone through, like, this crazy, like, binge moment. Joe, our friend Joe, has an Oktoberfest party, and he makes these incredible pretzels, like, actual, like, legitimate pretzels.
Cool.
And I know that they were planning on freezing some of those pretzels, and I went into that damn kitchen and ate, like, six of them, like, shoving them into my mouth. It's an outside, everybody's outside, and, like, as somebody comes in through the front door, I'm panicking, trying to, like, swallow the last of these six pretzels. And then I went outside, and I was kind of drifting past where the band was, and the lead singer of the band stopped and cracked a joke as I walked by, and he says, this guy looks like Garth Brooks. And then, like, I kind of chuckled, and he goes, but only a fat version of him. And I was like, I almost got into a fight. I was in such a bad headspace.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think people don't realize that stuff happens, that it happens to men, it happens to women. It's like, I always look at it, it's like, I'm very confident in who I am, right? I'm, like, out in front of the community. I'm a leader where I work. And if I'm struggling with it, like, how are some other people doing, you know? So I think we need to open that up.
Yeah.
I don't know how. People can talk to me. Like, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely, over the past couple of years, it's come up on runs with people that I don't know super well. And we find that we've had a similar experience in college or beyond. And the more that you talk about it, I think people, you know, share experiences and everyone doesn't want to bring it up, like, unless, you know, you do it first.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I miss most about being running with groups is that the ease in which we can talk about things,
like,
on a run.
Vulnerable topics.
Like, it just something opens up when you're out
for
on a run.
I wonder what that is. Like, is it just that you're doing something else and so you don't have time to feel that discomfort of being vulnerable?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, the, I don't know, the shared suffering of running sometimes, like, brings people together in, like, a different way. Whereas if you're just having lunch with them, you might not talk about it. But if you're both like, you know,
sweating
and it's hot and it's, you're doing a long run or something and you feel like crap, then sometimes those things just come up.
Right.
Might not otherwise come up. But I had, if you want, I can talk about my experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
I had a little bit different experience, kind of the opposite. I've never formally diagnosed with anything, you know, but just kind of self, you know, like I definitely had an eating issue in college. Mm-hmm. And again, it went back to like some comments that were made my freshman year. And coach said, you know, oh, you probably should lose some weight before you come back. Give me a number. Went away for the summer. Was like, all right, I'm doing this. And I did it. And I came back and, you know, comments like, oh, you look so fit. And, which, you know, not good, but I came back to school very, very thin. And, you know, the first season went well, which, you know, was kind of like a not a good reinforcement of it.
Right.
My cross country season, I ran really well. I was like our second runner on the team. I was like, okay, like this was it. Like, this is what I had to do.
Yeah, I did what I should have.
To get to the next level. Like, she was right. And kept going, started to feel, you know, very tired. And like just, I got to the point where like I was waking up at like 2 or 3 in the morning and like starving.
Hungry.
And I was just like, I need to eat something. So I would eat something. And then I wake up in the morning and be like, well, I already ate something. So like,
I shouldn't eat again.
So that was breakfast. And then it was like, okay, well, you know, lunch is going to be early cause I'm really hungry. So I would eat a salad for lunch. And then it was like, okay, now I'm going to wait till dinner and eat another salad.
Right.
So it was just this cycle of, you know, got through that year. Not
and you're probably bringing in like 1200 calories maybe. And your base metabolic rate was probably around 2,400, 2,500.
Right, like much higher. And
then,
I didn't know
at any
time we
were working out. And then you're running 8 miles.
Yeah. Right, and then like, I think in the culture of it, a lot of what we've seen people come out with is like the whole team does it. So when we go to team dinners, we probably had like, you know, there was a couple girls on the team that would eat pasta and stuff, but a lot of girls ate salads or, you know, seemingly like healthy meals. Like, oh, we're eating so healthy. Like we're the athletes. Like we're eating a salad with grilled chicken.
Oh, I would absolutely eat different when I ate with the team versus when I ate with my roommate.
Right. Cause you don't want to be judged as like, oh, well, why are you eating that? Like we're all eating
salad.
You're
not taking it seriously.
It was almost like not an outright competition, but like a competition in probably my head and maybe some others like, well, I'm not going to, you know, eat a cookie because, like, I don't want to eat more than you and I don't want to eat bigger than you. So, I mean, that kind of went on for a year. And the next summer, I remember I was like, okay, the spring track season, I started to, like, not run as well and I was really tired. Got through the summer and I distinctly remember I went to my friend's cottage, like her grandma's cottage for, like, a weekend. And we were all collegiate runners, so we went out on a long run and the next day I woke up and like had really bad like lower back pain. It was like, I'm going to go run. And I went out on my run and couldn't make it more than a quarter mile.
Oh, wow.
And like walked back and then actually went to go see my chiropractor, Mike Reinhardt, who's awesome, who why I got into the field. But he was the one that, you know, eventually sent me for an x-ray and was like, you know, you might want to make sure this isn't, you know, a stress fracture or something. And it ended up being a stress fracture.
Oh, gosh.
And this is like that positive reinforcement you got from losing some weight, both verbally from people and your initial season when you still had reserves.
Where they were
it
still,
fell apart, right?
It all fell apart. I was, you know, and then it was like, okay, now my junior year cross country season is totally shot.
Done,
it was done. And it was hard because you know, I wasn't given a lot of like instruction by my coach at that point. It was kind of like left to my own, you know, to like cross train and get through it. And then I came back and my team physician was like, you need to see the nutritionist. And that was met with some, you know, not like, coach didn't really want me to do that or you know, didn't really, you know, was okay with it. But then when I gave her the plan, it was more like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, she's seeing a lot of calories on there.
Right. And so
the nutritionist knows what you need to perform.
Right. So eventually, you know, I gained back probably the 15 pounds I lost and now I'm back to 150 and I was running well again. But like then there was still that internal like in the mirror, like now I'm like bigger again. Like I don't like how I look. And it was kind of a battle for the next couple of years of just trying to, you know, be small, but not too small. And, you know, having days where I felt like I ate too much and I had to work harder to burn
it off. Well, sometimes you want to say like the way I'm going to look is going to impact my performance, right? Like if I can see all of my abs, I'm fit.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of I'm thin.
Right. And I think the problem too in running, you know, unlike other sports where like if you look at a basketball uniform and they've got baggy long shorts, they've got a loose fitting tank top. If you're running, especially the women's uniforms, you're wearing a skin tight singlet.
Yep.
You're either wearing like bikini bottoms or like, you know, skin tight little shorts that are like, you know, barely cover your butt. So like you're looking in the mirror like if you can see any fat rolling over the uniform, like this is not a good thing.
and it's pervasive in the sport. So like Strava, which is like the number one go-to, right?
Yeah.
They have just added weight classes to their KLMs and their QOMs for segments.
Okay.
So like if you run from the Edgemere Drive stretch right here is like a 4 mile stretch, and that's one of the segments. Well, now you can look at it in by weight class.
Your weight class.
And it's like, that's not a good thing, right? So I look at it because I was joking with Mike Weldon. I was like, well, I ran the Last Runner Standing. I ran like 6 loops plus plus I marked the course, and I was a 11:22 per mile. And I was like, show me someone over 280 pounds in Rochester that can do that. And I was like, it's a weird thing to say, you know?
Yeah.
But like I say it all the time, you know. So But it continued with you though all through college.
Right. And I think, you know, I got to a point where I was running again, I was healthy again, but I was still getting a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
And I was injured all the time. Like I didn't get another stress fracture, but at one point, one of my teammates hugged me and like broke my rib, like from hugging. Cause my bone density was
the long-term ramifications of that season of thinness.
Right. And then, you know, I ended up getting tarsal tunnel syndrome my last, you know, year, my senior year. And my collegiate running career was over. I couldn't come back from it. You know, there wasn't enough time to fix it.
Right.
And, you know, I just didn't have enough energy. So I was just done. I stopped running, and I ended up, what I got into next, which wasn't helpful either, was I started doing like bikini competitions, which, you know, I was an exercise science major. Some of my friends did bodybuilding type stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, this is something I can do when I'm injured. Like I can lift weights.
Yeah.
But then the problem with that was like I was counting calories still.
Macro, micronutrient.
Right. Even though I weighed more, it was still like I have to be shredded.
Saying everything is how you look. And
everything is how you look.
You're
so
literally
going
to be judged on it.
Right. So it took me a long time. Like I probably did that for 2 or 3 years. And then when I switched to triathlon, like that was done. But my metabolism was so screwed up from like years of just like messing around with it and just eating, you know, so little and such a minimal diet of like I was eating like grilled chicken and broccoli for like every meal. Eggs, you know, that was like what we ate.
Yeah.
That was just like the culture of that sport.
Right.
So it took me a while to kind of like get things back on track and kind of get my health back after that.
Yeah. And I think it impacts so many phases of your life.
Yeah.
So like for me, like I have dealt with colitis issues and one of the worst things you can do is overeat because your body literally can't handle it. And then Sheila's dealing with me being sick. And then I'm like, you know, how come I'm not losing weight when I'm sick? But when you look at like, well, if you just had your normal day of say you had 2,500 calories, but you binged 3,000 in a sitting, like even getting sick doesn't take that 3,000 out, right? So it's like, but you start doing that in your head and you start saying like, how come this isn't fixing things? How come I'm not improving? And then she has to deal with it, like with my mood swings and like when she could probably tell you when I've probably done something stupid because I get mad, you know, it's like I carry this guilt.
I know I definitely was super irritable when I was like going into those times of like not eating a lot. Like you get moody when you, you know, whatever.
Have a Snickers.
Exactly.
I think some of that too is like the shame of it. Yeah. Like you just said, you know, I feel guilty and that's not a good feeling. So.
Right.
Like on top of being hungry, if you're,
right,
you know, not eating enough.
Right.
I think then there's also that like, I'm mad at myself for doing this thing or not doing something.
Right. And I have to do something to, like, you know, that was another, you know, issue that I had was like, you know, I ate really, really healthy, you know, quote unquote.
Right.
But then like there was times where there was something going on where maybe I had a piece of pizza or something. And then I was like, okay, well now I need to like undo that.
You have to like out train your diet.
I got to go run an extra mile or I got to go do core or go to the weight room or something.
Right.
Like I got to undo that. Otherwise like I'm going to see it tomorrow in the mirror, even though that's not really how it works. But like when you're so hypercritical of like how you look, you look in the mirror and you're like, well, that's from yesterday.
Right.
That Snickers.
Yeah. And like we know that that's not true. Like it doesn't happen that fast, but in your mind it does.
In your mind it does. You notice things immediately. immediately like, oh, I look bloated. Like, right. I, you know, mm-hmm. more right. than I've, you know, normally did.
And some of that, like, you know, even if, like, you were saying you weren't formally diagnosed, like,
right.
I had that summer where, like,
right.
I don't know, was it an eating disorder? But it was definitely disordered eating.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
And that, I think, is really common. Like, I think mm-hmm. the idea of I did something bad, food being bad mm-hmm. or good, I think those kinds
right.
of things are so common. And, again, those are things that we pass along
mm-hmm. right.
to our kids, to the kids we're around, to the young people we're around. So I feel like I have to do a better job of really thinking about what I'm saying and, like...
Right, and even just, like, something as simple like, oh, we earned our dessert tonight.
Yes.
Like,
right.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, after people do a race, they, like, go out and have a meal, and they're like, well, I earned it today.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
why did we have to earn
all
it?
All the Thanksgiving races,
yeah.
that's, like, the
oh.
big theme, right?
Oh,
there's
yeah.
infographics that are, like, you know,
earned
if you run...
Turkey.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, if you run this many miles, you can have a donut. If you run this
right.
many miles, you
yeah.
can have a beer. Like... I mean,
yeah.
but in reality, it's like that. So
not,
you need calories whether you run
right,
or not.
Yeah.
Like, why do we need to make a graph
yeah.
about this?
Yeah.
Do you feel like the people that were close to you knew something was going on?
Yeah. I mean, definitely at a couple points, my mom had said something to me and
mm-hmm.
it was just like, you know, you need to eat a little bit more.
Moms know.
Looking a little bit too small.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it was hard in college because the team that I was on, I think a lot of, even though it was unspoken, I think a lot of other girls on the team, and actually one of
yeah.
my former teammates passed away of, you know, issues
yeah.
with eating disorders a couple of years ago. But yeah, I think a lot of us are dealing with similar things, just didn't talk about it.
Right.
So it's just like this shared experience, and we all kind of like did this thing, and no
yeah.
one talked about it.
Yeah.
And
what's it been like for you? Like dealing with me dealing with something. I shouldn't say dealing with, but like living through that.
Well, I think it's hard. I mean, there's nothing I can do other than be supportive.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's just like any other
yeah.
disorder, addiction. I don't know if addiction is the right word for
yeah.
it, but like I can just support you through whatever you're going through
right.
and encourage you to continue to make good choices and not just food choices, but like
right.
continue talking to somebody, continue mm-hmm. getting help, you know?
Right.
And so that I think can be really hard. And then not knowing what to say, like
mm-hmm.
we don't talk about things. So in the past we've had friends who we've seen get very thin and we
right.
are worried and we'll
right.
talk about it. And it's like, well, what do you say? Like, do
yeah.
I say something? Do I
how do you
express concern?
Mm-hmm.
Because I just spent a whole lot of time today talking about like,
oh, we shouldn't
talk about people's bodies.
Right.
right.
But also if it is
if
like a legitimate concern, then
how do you address it?
Right. And I think, I mean, there's people that like you're saying, they're just mm-hmm. very thin or they have a medical condition.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they just don't want to disclose that, but
you're right.
Like also as a friend, sometimes I see people and I'm like, I'm very worried that you are on a bad path, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think what we can do, first off, I'm glad that you were willing to come on and share.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that it really helps. I'm glad that we were able to give a couple of different perspectives here.
Mm-hmm.
That might help. What we'll do in our show notes and in our social media posts when we put this out is we're going to link to the National Eating Disorders
mm-hmm.
Association. And there is the very first tab on their website is resources. And I think it's important for people to see, like, there's a lot going on. Like, there's a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to meet with someone, you can literally find someone that you can text with and talk through things. Like, there's online resources where
mm-hmm.
you can fill surveys out and talk with people, you know, through a chat box.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Stupid AI, they actually, NEDA had a huge issue. They had a chat bot that they started and
mm-hmm.
it kind of went rogue.
Oh,
and
no.
it was giving like all of the wrong information to people with eating disorders and they had to like shut it down.
Oh,
people
geez.
Got in trouble. But I think, you know, talking to someone that knows how to deal with it
mm-hmm.
or talking with someone that is or has gone through
yeah.
it and know that you're not the only one out there dealing with whatever it is that you've got
mm-hmm.
going on. Like nobody
mm-hmm.
is a party of one. Like
right.
everybody has somebody else going through what they've gone through.
Right.
So we'll put that information plus all the other stuff that we talked about. We'll throw
mm-hmm.
some of that stuff into the show notes. All the links and information that we shared today, we'll put in there. So,
and if you want to talk to somebody, Mm-hmm. I mean, all three of us have expressed that we are happy to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Dr. John can put a heat pack on your back, stretch your hips out, and have a conversation. All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for,
for
joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
In 2 weeks, it'll be our format. We'll go back to, it'll be Sheila and I. And then we'll have a guest on 2 weeks again after that. So we're rolling now. We've got a routine where every 2 weeks. So watch it.
As long as I don't
get 2 weeks, I guarantee someone comes
as
on.
As long as I don't get sick again.
Yep. So, all right. Well, that's everything for this week. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for listening.
Adios.
Bye.
Sounds Here we go now.